Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 461. I am Chris. As always, joined by no one. This is actually not true. Most times I am joined by somebody. Sometimes I'm not even here. Tony is off doing family stuff. Jeff, as he stated last week, he's heading off to someplace in Wisconsin for vacation, and Earl is hanging out in the city somewhere, not around with us. So I am here carrying the torch myself this week. Not much to talk about. I guess there's some news. I'm not really going to go into the news, but there's some stuff I kind of want to go over for this week, because it's timely and I'm not going to be around next week while they record. So one of the things that came out last week was Wolfenstein Youngblood. It is getting okay reviews, I guess. Not great, but it's holding its own. It is, you know, sevens or so. I think those are that's a fair score. That's about what I would give it. I beat it in one day, but it's not necessarily a one day game. The 9 hours of play. It's a weird game because there are parts of it that I think are really good, and there are parts of it that I think are very not good. Not necessarily terrible. There is some of that, as in the bullet spongy enemies that they throw at you. Anyway, Youngblood is a co-op Wolfenstein game. You play as BJ's daughters, and let's see how to explain this best. Basically, BJ goes missing, and his daughters are on the lookout for her. You end up in Paris, where you hook up with the resistance, and the resistance quickly puts you to work taking down a Nazi general on this Zeppelin. It's cool, really cool mission. It culminates with a shitty boss fight, but I think all Wolfenstein games kind of play that way, where there are shitty boss fights full of. Just you pump so much ammo into them, and it to me, the boss fights in Wolfenstein are generally not great. But the level design, getting to that point, is a lot of fun. And then this is the same. It's really a good level. Looks great. Lots of atmosphere. Tons of fun getting to that boss. Problem is, after that boss fight, the game kind of settles in, and if you played the last game, I think it's the New Colossus, there was a hub base, and you would go out on these story missions, but they had these side missions as well that you could pick up and do. And there were little things, like you'd go back to certain locations, certain maps that you've already been to, and re-explore them doing like little menial tasks, or taking out like commanders, or finding some stuff and bringing it back to the resistance. Similar here, except that is the majority of this game for like the first 5 hours. So it's all those little side missions from New Colossus that weren't great there that you're now playing for your whole game. Fortunately, killing Nazis is still a ton of fun. I'm not a huge fan of the weapons in, like, the weapon feel. They're very heavy weapons. There's a weight to them. This isn't Doom or Wolfenstein of old, where it was almost arcade feeling. Like, these are heavy, cloggy weapons, and not Call of Duty cloggy. Like, that's almost more arcade style. This is Killzone style. Which I think works for Killzone because it's a slower paced game. Wolfenstein isn't. And there's a lot of shooting, a lot of bullets at these enemies because they just soak them up. And I'm not sure if I don't remember this from New Colossus, but one of the mechanics is shooting an enemy with a gun that counteracts their type of armor. So you use like an assault rifle on a guy that has like heavier armor because those bullets are bigger. You can use submachine guns against like unarmored enemies because that'll take down them quicker. There's a lot of it's almost like a rock paper scissor type thing that I never really got a good feel for, and it didn't. I don't know. I didn't like it because it just kind of felt like you're guessing at what you need to be shooting these guys with, and in the process, just filling them up with lead, because that's the ultimate solution to everything here is to shoot, and keep shooting. The core conceit here, though, is that you're these two sisters, and the entire game is played co-op. You can play it solo, but it comes with an AI co-op partner. That AI partner is a complete moron. Sometimes they'll just luckily kill some enemies for you, but most of the time they just get in your way. They go down often, so you need to revive them because there's a life system. So if you lose 3 lives, I'm not really sure what happened. I never lost 3 lives, but I assume the game would be over. And you'd have to go back to like a checkpoint where it saved previously. So I'm not a huge fan of that. And by default, the game wants you to play with other people. So it wants you to play online with other people. And I did not play it that way. And I don't necessarily want to play a Wolfenstein game with like random people, maybe a friend. Although, I mean, everything is more fun co-op wise with friends, but I don't think I had enough fun with it that like I would, you know, pop this in and play it with my kid, which I've been playing a lot of like co-op games with him recently. And I'm not sure this is one that I'd jump into with him. Anyway, once you level up enough, you can kind of actually then progress the story and stop doing these little side missions. And those missions are really well done. There's only about 5 actual story missions, including like that prologue mission in the entire game, but they're all really good. They all culminate in shitty boss battles, but, for the most part, the actual levels, great time, great fun, had a lot of fun shooting Nazis in them. Love the architecture, love the design. These Wolfenstein games have a great look to them. So they were fun. There's the 80s aesthetic to this. I don't think it really plays to it as well as it could. But it also technically takes place in like 80 or 81. So we don't get that full dose of like 80s Valley Girl, you know, hair metal type stuff going on because it's early 80s, not late 80s. It does set up for more, and it'll be interesting to see what they do going forward with the series, but I wouldn't say this is a necessary game, but it's fun. It's fun enough to play. So if you're looking for something new while waiting for the big games to come out, it's $30. That's a good price. I paid 3 because I rented it, but $30, probably not bad. Let's see, what else did I play this week? I played a game called Fantasy Strike on the Switch, and it's a fighting game. I am not a huge fighting game guy, but this one seems pretty cool. Animation-wise, really good looking. It's a little anime-inspired, but... like animation wise, special wise, like it's really kind of cool. I think it looks good. I am just terrible at it, as I am generally with most fantasy games, with most fighting games. I mean, it's just not my favorite. It's not my favorite genre. this is a good one. I'm going to probably, like, my Switch is going to go with me on vacation next week. So I think this might be one that I can kind of pull out with, you know, my kids, and we can have like some one-on-one fighting going on with this, because the models are great. I think they look really good. And the gameplay itself is, it's decent fighting. So there's that. Anything else that I played this week? Not really much. I guess there's a little bit of news out there. Ninja, a big Twitch streamer for Fortnite, he is leaving Twitch. He's moving to Mixer exclusively. I'm not sure if that, I mean, that's great news for Mixer, getting like the one of the biggest names in streaming over to their platform. That's excellent news for them. I'm not sure that I'm in love with the idea, though, because I think Ninja has a pretty toxic community around him. And he facilitates that to a point. And I like Mixer. I like streaming on Mixer. It's really easy. Like, they have some great tools that allow me to not have to work really hard to stream there. And my experience with the community has been generally pretty positive. I don't want necessarily to see trash coming over. And I'm not saying that Ninja is going to bring that element with him, but that is my experience with him and his community around him. Is it is not great. So that's kind of it for on the news side of things. I guess real quick, and this may be more for the entire group once we get them back in a couple weeks, but Daxter sent in a question for this week. Over the past couple of years, many games have been likened to Dark Souls. It is definitely one of the most influential games of the last generation, to be sure. But when someone like Jeff says that Breath of the Wild is Dark Souls-like, what does that mean? Does it mean that it's hard? Does it punish you for being careless and dying? Or is a gameplay-driven experience with story elements being left in the background? And what exactly about Dark Souls experience could turn a person like Chris off from a game? I think a lot of that needs to be answered by Jeff. I have played a lot of Dark Souls. I put about 70 hours into the original Dark Souls. I don't like it. It doesn't necessarily click for me. Everything about it, the aesthetic is wonderful. I don't even dislike the actual mechanics of the gameplay, but there's something about it that doesn't click with me. And it's not necessarily that it's hard or that it punishes you for being careless, because I've played hard games, although I have less patience for them now. But I have played hard games in the past. And done well at them. Something about Dark Souls just does not click with me, so I can't really put my finger on exactly what it is about Dark Souls that doesn't work. In terms of Breath of the Wild, there are aspects of that game that don't click for me, because it's not what I want out of a Zelda game. Maybe out of a different game, I think it would be fine, but... I want a more directed experience out of Zelda. That's not to say that, you know, Zelda is very open and explore and try and figure things out. But there's a structure to figuring those things out. And I don't think Breath of the Wild necessarily evolves in that way. It is more kind of, here's this world, here's this giant sandbox, go play in it. And I'm not sure that I enjoy that aspect of it. Couple that with some gameplay mechanics that just don't click for me. And It's not necessarily great for me. Like, I understand people love Breath of the Wild, and I do think there are things about it that are great, but in terms of what I want out of a game, I am not in love with it. It's too much freedom, I think, for me to play that. But we'll maybe revisit this when Jeff is back around or Pete is on, as they are more, they are pretty big fans of the Dark Souls genre of game, and a series, and Bloodborne and Sekiro. Like, so that they can maybe speak a little more to like what the ins and outs of calling a game Dark Souls ish kinds of means. Well, there's not much else really for me to kind of touch on here. And I do feel a little insecure just talking to myself over and over again. Some things I kind of want to touch on before I end here, though. I read the Gears of War retrospective by former Polygon review editor Arthur Geese. That is a retrospective on the 10 years plus that the series has been around. It's a really cool book. It has a lot of insight into the original Gears of War. And then some insight on the next four games that are in the franchise, even with a little bit coming up on five. I think if you're a Gears of War fan, it is well worth a read. I think maybe even if you're not a Gears of War fan, but just kind of want to take a look at what it takes to make a triple A game for a platform holder, and the expectations that come with that and how you manage that, it is a fascinating story. And I think Arthur did a great job kind of chronicling that for readers. And it's a cool looking book. I currently have it on my coffee table. So I really like that. And not game related, but similarly as intriguing is I'm currently reading The Making of Alien by J.W. Rinzler. He's done some other making of film books. There's a lot about Alien that I've read some stuff on Alien in the past, but there's a lot that I just did not know about. And this does a great job really bringing that story to life. It's fascinating to see how a movie that is so beloved, like it's 40 years old at this point, but how a movie like that is so beloved, just had such a trouble even getting greenlit to be a film. To see the progression of the story, of the narrative, of the design of the creature itself, it's fascinating to read. So if you're interested in Alien or in movie making, I think The Making of Alien is something you should maybe also go out there and take a look at. So I guess that's it. Not much more for me. So I am going to end it here, and we'll be back next week. Well, hopefully they will record while I am away next week. If not, we'll be back in 2 weeks. I'll be back in 2 weeks, and we'll have a show, and we'll go from there. So thank you all for listening. Good night.